You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 46, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, now a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. And joining me this week is our old friend Scott Coles. How you doing, buddy?
I'm not that old.
I didn't mean old in a literal sense. I meant old in a figurative sense.
Ah, I see.
And Scott was last heard. Okay, and Scott was last heard in episode number 29, so it's been a while.
Yeah, you never call anymore.
I never call, I never write, I'm a terrible friend. I do admit it.
Brother has been giving me the business, it's no good. Clean up your act, kid.
I'm sorry, I'll try to do better. Anyway, Scott is here because he is the number one Hercules fan, and we have a special issue of Thor to cover this week.
Oh.
Yes, we have Thor number
356
from June of 1985.
85, the golden age of comics as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
Oh yeah, 85, all my favorite comics came out around there. So,
well, that was a really interesting era because wasn't that around the time of Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yep, Crisis, Simonson on Thor, you had I guess it was between 85 and 88, because when you get into 88, then you get into like the new Justice League, the Bwahaha guys.
Right.
Suicide Squad. Great stuff.
Somebody ought to do a Suicide Squad podcast.
I don't think it's possible.
I don't think it's possible either. How many times has their book been canceled?
I know. Terrible. I'm reading the current one, though. I'm liking it, so we'll see how it goes.
Cool. Yeah. I have to admit, I haven't been keeping up with that particular series. It was never really one of my favorites.
Well, to each their own, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Some people like Thor, some people like Hercules.
That's right, and some people like both.
That's true.
Right. So let's go ahead and move on to our review. All right.
Hercules, hero of song and story, Hercules, winner of ancient glory, fighting for the right, fighting with his might, with the strength of 10 ordinary men. Hercules, people are safe when near him. Hercules, only the evil fear him. Softness in his eyes, iron in his thighs, virtue in his heart, fire in every part of the mighty Hercules.
Boy, we haven't heard that one in a long time.
That dude can hold a note, let me tell you. That last Hercules just goes on for days.
That's Johnny Nash singing.
Johnny Nash.
You like movies about gladiators?
Oh, hell yeah.
Of course we do. All right. So the issue, the first issue of this show will be Mighty Thor number 356 from June of 1985, retailed for 60 cents. And Scott, would you like to take us through this one?
My cover has 65 cents.
Oh, you're right. Did I say 62 cents?
You said 60 cents.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And in Canada, I paid 75, so there you go.
I'll have to fix that in post. Or maybe I won't.
You fixing stuff in post. What the heck?
Yeah, it's called editing.
It's all raw.
It's all raw. Yeah, no, I can't do that.
No? Whatever. Okay, so what are we doing? Am I doing this or you doing this?
Why don't you take us through this one?
Okie doke. So we have a nice cover. It looks like Bob Layton is pitch hitting here. He's a fan of Hercules, too.
I think so.
He's done an awful lot of work on him.
Mm-hmm.
Hercules is yet again showing off in front of a lady by pushing Thor off the cover of his own magazine. Since Walt Simonson is on vacation, so is Thor.
Oh, Herky, you're so godly.
Yeah, wow, she is a product of the 80s. Look at that girl. The headband and the leg warmers, the short shorts.
And what is that she's carrying?
Discus? Says, a gold record, perhaps? It says I'm not Frisbee sure. Perhaps she's a pop star of some sort.
Yeah, I think she's Sheena Easton.
So like she's like got Dazzler's gold record that she stole from her?
Maybe it's Dazzler.
Hmm.
It's a Dazzler card. No, the gold disc says Frisbee on it.
Oh, well, I guess it's probably a Frisbee then.
Zoomed in on it, yeah. He had to write Frisbee on it so he'd actually know what it was.
Yeah, otherwise you're like, why is she holding a big golden ball? What is that?
Seriously.
Anyway, so we'll hop inside here, and we have Hercules and some dude in a suit, and they're wandering through the... Oh, it's Jarvis!
It's Jarvis! Incidentally, we should do the credits here. This story was written by Bob Harras. Pencils by Jackson Geis. Bob Layton was the inker. John Workman did the lettering. Christy Scheel was the colorist. Mark Grunewald was the editor. And Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief.
Ah, yes, the Shooter era. So, yeah, we've got Hercules and Jarvis wandering through the park. Central Park, I assume. There's apparently great weather. The Mighty Avengers are going to have a feast.
Looks like Walt Simonson has assaulted this tree here. Walt yeah, plus Wheezy. It
does look a little broke on the top there.
Uh-huh.
What does it say on the trunk?
Walt plus Wheezy.
Oh, that's cute. So I guess they're out looking for ingredients for some of the unusual dinner requests that Hercules has put forth.
For those of you who aren't into comics, Jarvis is the Avengers butler.
Oh, yes. And I think at this point Hercules is staying at Avengers Mansion.
Yep.
As part of the Avengers. So that's cool.
I don't remember if he was part of the Avengers in this period, or whether he was just staying there.
He was just crashing at their house.
Because where else is Hercules going to live?
Yeah, he's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
It's either that or he sleeps in the field, right?
Right. He sleeps in Central Park, like with all
he
the winos.
He sleeps wherever hell he wants, really.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
He just happens to like to sleep at Avengers Mansion.
He's kind of like the Hulk in that way, just kind of wherever he passes
out. They have
out.
Cable, I guess.
They probably do, you would think,
He wants to watch that Skinamax or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Hercules is telling Jarvis he needs to cheer up. He says he takes everything so seriously. You're with Hercules, the Prince of Power, the Lion of Olympus, the son of omnipotent Zeus. Together we shall search out the delicacies I require. 'Twill be a splendid expedition. He says, yeah, basically.
Yeah. Well, what else is he going to say?
Yeah. You pretty much just sort of smile and nod when it comes to Hercules, I think. So they have to find a python? I can't read that word.
Oh, hang on. It says pithoi.
A pithoi?
Yeah, that's what it looks like, pithoi. Or pithoi.
Of Mycenaean wine. Oh, yeah.
Not available at your local liquor store, I had to say.
Yeah, that's definitely in the import section.
I don't know. I don't think my liquor store has Olympian imports, but...
No?
No.
Well, you just need to get a better liquor store then.
That's probably true.
So Hercules is giving him more crap about being too serious and having fun with life, and then he gets hit in the head with a frisbee. He's like, what is this? A discus of some sort? Have I ever told you of the time I competed in the discus throw at the first Olympics? 'Twas a wondrous event. I won, of course.
Oh, of course.
He sounds like Aquaman on the Brave and the Bold cartoon there. The tale I call, the time I threw the discus really far.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is... A girl, well, not necessarily the girl from the cover, but a girl comes running up. She's, oh, I'm so sorry. Are you hurt? He's, fear not, fair maiden. You just only strike me in the head. Ah, zing.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, and suddenly they recognize that he's Hercules, one of the Avengers. Girls! And suddenly she calls all her friends over, and Jarvis just parks his arse in a seat because he figures, well, we're going to be here a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking to himself, I thought Master Star Fox was a trial.
Yeah. Now, didn't Star Fox have this weird, like, pheromone power that attracted
people? Yeah, he had basically superhuman roofies.
Yeah.
He was just, he'd just make people do whatever he want. He could excite the pleasure centers of sentient beings.
That's right, yeah. I was kind of remembering, and he was one of these, he wasn't an inhuman, though. He was
one of the Eternals of...
Titan.
Titan, yes, Titan. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the Space Eternals, not the Earth Eternals.
Gotcha.
Back when it was okay to just trigger people's pleasure points.
Right.
And it wasn't creepy at all. Well, that was the 80s. See, that's what was great about the 80s. That could be your superpower and that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they can't even show it in the comics.
I know. Well, nowadays, he shows up in She-Hulk and he goes on trial for date rape or something stupid like that, right? Oh, well. So, meanwhile, not far away, there's a kid. He's reading. Is he reading or drawing, maybe?
He's drawing.
Yeah, he's drawing in the sketchbook. He's drawing Thor.
Well, this is Thor's book, so.
I suppose he's got to show up somehow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's doodling away, and oh, here comes ruffians. Ruffians and ne'er-do-wells making fun of Matthew Linden, the neighborhood quote-unquote artist. So, yeah, they're giving him the gears a little bit. Why don't you play ball like normal kids? I like to draw, that's all.
This is probably half the listeners of the show's childhood memory here.
Mm-hmm. Ah, bullying. Apparently it was okay in the 80s, too.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not.
These guys might get their comeuppance. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony steals the sketch pad and is it his purse?
It looks like a purse.
It looks an awful lot like a purse. Maybe it's just his male European handbag.
Yeah.
His satchel.
Or maybe you know what it is? It's a catcher's mitt. Because
because he was has a key.
Yeah, the one kid is carrying a ball bat, and the other one has a mitt. And
right,
yeah.
All right,
okay. It does look like a purse.
That's a little less weird then. So he snatches the sketchbook away, and he's gonna show it off to all the dudes. And he's like, "Give it back!" And they're all making fun of him, like they do, you know,
like bullies do.
And a bunch of pictures of that Thor super guy. What's he? Your ideal or something? This kid does not look like he would use the phrase ideal.
Uh-huh.
He's like your boyfriend or something. Figures you'd like a guy like that, a real weirdo who talks funny and has long hair.
This coming from a guy who has like grayish green hair. But
And his buddy is wearing a midriff shirt with a star on it.
So. I don't even think that was cool in the 80s.
Well, I will admit, in the 80s, I did have a shirt that only went down that far for a little while, but... I was built for it then, so I guess it was all right, but
gotcha.
It's probably not all right. I just try to justify it because I just want to be cool like these guys.
It was the 80s. Yeah.
It was the 80s. It's true. We can't be blamed for anything. So basically, this guy's giving him the gears because he likes Thor instead of like the Human Torch or Spider-Man. Real heroes, he says. And so Matthew is very polite, and he says, "Can I have my book back, please? I just want to draw." And he's like, "Why? So your mother can show your pictures around like you're special or something? No way." And he rips a page out of the book, crumples it up. "Besides, you'd want to see a picture of a loser like Thor anyway." Matthew is not happy. He says, "You think you're hot stuff, Tony, because you're bigger than me and you can beat me up. But you can't beat Thor up. He's 100 times better than your stupid heroes." He's like, "You think so? Prove it." "Well, all right, I'll just phone Thor. How about that?" No, he does not say that. He says, "I don't have to prove anything to you, Tony." He says, "Sure you do. That is, if you don't want your little picture book to end up in tomorrow's trash." Dun, 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 dun. And as luck would have it, this is the time when Hercules has pried himself away from his bevy of beauties and is now walking along the path with Jarvis again. And they're like, "Hey, there's Hercules."
Or could just be some other weirdo dressed as Hercules.
Well, I suppose it could be, but... and Herc's like, "Hey, man, what can I do? Chicks dig me. It's, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. I gotta sign autographs, gotta press flesh, you know?"
Mm.
The bullies are like, "Okay, well, now, here's how you can prove your buddy Thor is so strong. You can ask Hercules. Everyone knows they're real tight." And he's like, "I can't talk to him. He's an Avenger. So what are you, chicken?" And he pushes him out in front of Hercules. "What's this? A young boy apparently awestruck in the presence of mighty Hercules. Tut tut, lad. Come, you have a question for the Lion of Olympus? Speak." He's like, "Who's stronger, Mr. Hercules, you or Thor?" He starts laughing. "Excuse me, lad, while I regain my composure. Surely you know that I am called the Prince of Power. I did not come by that name easily." He goes on to talk about the labors of Hercules, fighting the Hydra and the Nemean Bull. Or no, sorry, the Cretan Bull, I guess. Cerberus and a giant. He's like, "Dude, I totally beat all those guys up." He's like, "I'm sorry, sir. I'm sure that old stuff is real impressive, but I just got to know, who's stronger, you or Thor?" He's like, "Well, if you insist, I'll have to tell you of the last confrontation between the God of Thunder and myself. Truly, it was an epic battle of which the poets shall long sing." So they're at Avengers Mansion, and Hercules is kicking back with his feet up on the table like he does.
Mm-hmm.
And Hercules says, "Hey, Thor, what's going on?" He looks really weirdly proportioned there.
He does, yeah.
He's all lumpy.
Look how big Hercules' hand is compared to his head.
I know. He could totally like just wrap his thumb and forefinger around his head. It must be that headband's really tight.
Uh-huh.
80s. What are you going to do?
Thor looks a little bit weird, too.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. So he sees that Thor is troubled, and he says, "Yeah, I'm depressed. Although the exploits of Thor are the stuff of legend, although I've fought storm giants and troll kings and have reached the furthest edge of the universe, still they are nothing beside your glorious deeds." I think there might be some creative license going on in this story.
Just a little.
Hercules says, "Oh, you are too kind. And you, too humble, friend Hercules, pray let us engage in our test of strength once more. Perhaps if I beat you this time, then truly my life will have meaning once more. He has Jarvis saying, oh, Master Thor, why must you always embarrass yourself?
Oh, apparently he does this often.
Yes. So Hercules says, all right, buddy, give it your best shot. So they start arm wrestling. And suddenly we're jarred back to the present where Jarvis is saying, excuse me, sir, but I don't recall any of this. Hercules is like, oh, I made an error. This all happened while you were taking your mother to Miami Beach on vacation, Jarvis.
Yeah, so,
so he disappears from the flashback, yeah.
Poor Jarvis.
Yeah. So now, needless to say, the contest of strength was over before it truly began. And Hercules just, boom, over the top, some no problems. He's like, all right, well, that was fun, but I got to go have some, I got a date. Got stuff to do.
And Thor gets all emo here.
And Thor's having a hissy fit. Again you win, again and again you best me. Why? What can I say, Asgardian? Someone has to be second best. Oh, yeah. But why must it be me, says Thor, and he clocks him in the head with the hammer, which, of course, doesn't hurt Hercules, just makes him angry.
But that's a strong spot.
Yeah, it's only his head. It's right. True. He's got all that hair and that headband to protect him. So Hercules gets angry and punches him through the wall. Big smash. Right. Thor is laid out in the alley. I have made the most grievous of errors. I have angered Hercules. I must defend myself. Hercules comes out the hole in the wall. Oh, there you are, Blackguard. So Thor picks up a street light since there's no trees handy to destroy.
Yeah. Well, that's New York City for you.
Yeah, I know. That's what you see? It all comes back to that.
So it looks like the Baxter
Building. Jack Kirby was from New York City, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Uh-huh. And see, it all comes around.
Well, why do you think that New York City doesn't have any trees?
That's right. They all hated trees.
Well, yeah. So, like, Thor was in the Avengers, and he'd go out at night killing trees.
Right.
But that's why there aren't any.
Except for in Central Park. There must be a force field or something there.
Oh, or Loki is protecting them or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Loki, he loves trees.
He's the champion of trees.
He's big on trees.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
He's a member of Greenpeace. Yeah. Well, he wears green, so there you go.
That's true. Yeah. Thor tries to smash him with the lamppost. Of course, it doesn't bother Hercules at all. He just grabs it and pulls it away from him and slaps him with it. He says, it was an ingenious plan to use my opponent's weapon against him, but then the son of Zeus has always been known for his quick thinking. Jarvis is starting to go, you know what? This doesn't sound like Thor at all. Are you sure? You know? And Hercules tells him to zip it. Obviously, this young lad is a fan of mine. Yes, I see. So he gets back to his story. Thor is, he kicks a car at him. Just out of nowhere, just kicks. In the middle of the street, too. He's not even, like, he's not even doing it from the sidewalk. He's in the middle of the road. So
there could be somebody in that car.
Somebody should be in that car if it's in the middle of the street. Yeah. But he doesn't care because he's emo Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And
Thor is a drama queen. We know that.
Yeah. And Hercules just sort of grabs the car and smashes it to bits. Again, hopefully there's nobody in the car or they bail when they realize that Thor's having an emo fit. And Hercules shoulder blocks him into the car, smashes him right through it. And what's going on here? Is that glass or is just like the concrete
he just rips up? I think it's just supposed to be the concrete from the street. He's ripping the street up.
Very strange. So he pulls up a big chunk of street to shield himself from Hercules' wrath, I guess. And Hercules is like, Thor, your destruction of city property is truly disgraceful. So he smashes his way through the center of the concrete shield. And then, I guess, grabs the city bus. Even after talking about city property, he's he's going to get in on it too.
And hopefully there's nobody in the bus.
I guess. So Thor uses his hammer to destroy the bus. Aha. And then Thor picks up another car. You hope you do not intend to stop me with that puny car. Oof. Tis not just a car, Hercules. Tis a Volkswagen. I guess that's supposed to be showing, you know, Hercules picks up a bus because he's so strong. And Thor has problems picking up a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
He's making a joke on Thor's expense there.
But that was also an advertising slogan in the 80s for Volkswagen. It's not just a car, it's a Volkswagen.
Twas a Volkswagen, he says as he crumples it up and throws it away. And they're like, wow, way to go, Hercules. Did you really trash a car like that? Would I lie, he says. So, you must be a lot stronger than Thor, right? Never a doubt in my mind, youth. So what happened next? So Thor attacks him physically, I guess. He just jumps on him. Thor, your insults do me more harm than your fists. Because he calls him a braggart. Not Thor. Or not Hercules, I should say. And he knocks them into a building, the Empire State Building. They just show like an outside cut of the Empire State Building, and boom, crash, pow, smash, blam, ka-tang.
It's just shaking the building. Yeah.
There's a slobber knocker going on in there. That's for sure. On the 101st floor, I remember my maiden fair waiting for me, so I decided to end our little tussle. And he hucks him out the window. He's like, oh, I didn't mean to throw him so strong. I must save him. So now he pulls the radio tower off the top, catches Thor with it. Well, sort of. He tries to catch him with the thing, but then doesn't compensate for the added weight. And they both fell down into the ground. And they're like, Mr. Hercules, how come I never saw nothing about the radio tower falling off the Empire State Building on the news or anything? I mean, something like that would be in all the papers, wouldn't it? He's like, it would. Well, there wasn't time, for the mighty Avengers, of whom I am the mightiest, did repair the tower the very next day.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Tony Stark paid for it to get fixed overnight.
Yeah. Cut to the ground. Hercules is standing, his hands on his hips. Thor is buried under rubble. He's like, ah, that was a good fight. Nothing like a good fight to clear one's head. How are you, Thor? He's like, I don't believe it. There's not a scratch on you. Of all the gods, why are the fates so generous to you? As the mortals say, just lucky I, eh? Oh, Mr. Hercules, would you be so kind as to help a little old lady across the street? Thor's going to talk to him. He's like, silence, Asgardian. I'm about to perform a good deed. And, of course, he helps the old lady across the street. And the lady hits Thor with her purse, calls him a hippie. Get a haircut, you hippie.
Because he was rude to the nice Mr. Hercules.
That's right, you beast. And so, children, always respect your elders and always, always cross at the green and not in between. Now I must be off. And that's one to grow on, says Hercules. That's it? You and Thor just stand around like nothing happened? What a jip. You're Hercules. You didn't brash his brains in? Well, of course I did. After all, Thor still had to learn a lesson, so he punches him and he goes flying through the store.
Like, it's like Macy's or something. The big department store.
So it looks like a perfume counter of some sort, and Thor goes flying through, and then Hercules is running along the top of the counter. And they fight some more, punchy-punchy, and... And then Hercules picks up Manhattan Island from its very bed and dumps Thor into the East River.
Uh-huh. And of course, nobody would remember that.
Yeah, the entire city just went 45 degrees and nobody notices that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Jarvis is like, the ending leaves one a bit incredulous, sir. Dude's like, I don't even think you can do that. It's impossible.
Even the bullies don't buy the story.
I know. Hercules is like, I see that this is the age of cynicism, Jarvis. Well, perhaps I did exaggerate a little bit. He's like, yeah, you do that, all right. Well, I was angry enough to lift the island from its roots, but I just punched him out instead. And the kids are like, haha, sounds like Thor's getting beat, but good. Beat? Child, never was any god met so sound a defeat. Punches and punches, and as he's talking, Matthew gets sadder and sadder.
Poor Matthew.
Yeah, see, Jarvis is noticing that Matthew is very sad, and the other kid is very happy. He's like, what's going on here? Suddenly, they're interrupted by the Frisbee lady again. She just can't keep control of that thing.
Yep. This looks more like the chick on the cover.
Yeah, maybe. And Hercules is like, tis you. Truly a power greater than either of us has brought us together again. Perhaps you'd care to dine with me sometime. Sure, but I gotta ask my boyfriend, Biff. What, pray tell, is a Biff? During the commotion, this sketchbook was dropped, says Jarvis. And the kid's like, hey, where's the sketchbook? Hands off, pops. Don't you know it ain't polite to go through other people's things? So now he's figured it out, and he gives Hercules the old heads up. He's like, hey, dude, this dude loves Thor. So Hercules is like, yeah, I was all ready for the final blow. All seemed dark for Thor, when suddenly Thor punches him in the face. Oof! Enough, the son of Odin will feign weakness no longer. Such strength, such power, never had I seen its like. And then, so Thor starts pulling the Hulk Hogan and coming back, beating him up. That hurt, he says. Hercules, prepare thyself for the wrath of Thor.
I like how they make him look all mean and dark in this
He's got like the emo eyeshadow and stuff.
Yeah, very Klaus Janson inked it or something.
Yeah, and then the next page is a full page spread of Hercules getting punched so hard he flies off of Manhattan Island into New Jersey. Not New Jersey! In a place the gods forgot. You mean Thor 1, he beat you? And Hercules says, of course, why would I lie? Aw, nuts, says the nerd bully. Here's your stupid book back, you little worm. Now get out of here! He's like, ho there. I would not speak to a friend of Hercules in such a manner, for I cannot abide a bully, if you understand my meaning. And they're like, oh, jeez, let's go! And they all run away. And Hercules picks up Matthew and says, hey, would you like to eat with the Avengers tonight? What? Can my mom come? He's like, of course. Hercules loves moms.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually say that.
No, it's implied.
It's implied, for sure. And they have to go find that Mycenaean wine. Of course, friend Jarvis, where would I be without you? I shudder to think, sir. The end.
And that is Thor number 356. I have to say one thing. Jackson Geist draws the ugliest children.
Yeah, they really are sort of mutant-ish, aren't they? Lanky and weird-looking.
Yeah, some artists are really good at drawing kids, but sometimes you just find an artist and it just makes them look like little misshapen adults.
Yeah.
And John Byrne is really bad with that.
Yeah, he kind of is, yeah. Yep. This is really pretty early on in Jackson's career as well, too, so...
Yeah, what was he drawing at that point?
I don't know. It was shortly after this that he got his gig on Flash.
Right. And before he was going by Jackson Geist, he was doing stuff under the name Butch.
Butch, yeah.
Yeah. I like the full page spread of Hercules flying out of the city.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
That's probably my favorite page out of the whole story.
He probably enjoyed that page. More work into it.
The stunt back on page 18 where Hercules is lifting up Manhattan Island, there was actually something like that in a Marvel team-up comic. Or it was either Marvel team-up or Marvel 2-in-1,
mm-hmm.
where Hercules actually towed Manhattan back to where it belonged after some villain had moved it. And they strapped a harness to Hercules and had him pull Manhattan back to where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I think that they actually
calling me Marvel team up.
Yeah, it was one of those team up books, and they had a mention of it in the Marvel No Prize book.
Ah,
because it's clearly that couldn't happen.
Whatever.
Yeah, so this is a nice little fill in here. Obviously, Walt Simonson had took some time off after the epic battle against Surtur and all the aftermath of that.
Oh, I missed all that already.
Damn. Yeah, well, they have the issue before this was a fill-in with art by Sal Buscema.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's this. And, of course, Walt Simonson is coming back in the very next issue, which we're going to talk about now.
All right.
So going into Thor number 357, has a cover date of July of 1985, retailed for 65 cents, which is 75 cents in Canada. Is the exchange rate still that different?
No, actually, our exchange rate right now, we're pretty much on par.
Oh, right. Okay. So this would cost 65 cents in Canada as well.
Yes. And, if indeed you could find a comic book for 65 cents again these days.
maybe this comic beat up in a quarter box. You might be able to find it for 65
maybe,
cents.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
In a quarter box, you can get it for 65 cents.
Yeah, that's about right. Have you seen a quarter box where anything was a quarter lately?
Not lately, no. Mm. You're lucky if you can find a 50-cent bin at this point. So
yeah, and mostly
it's dollar comics, especially stuff from this era,
right? Yeah, stuff. Yeah. But so we get a split cover here. It's a Walt Simonson cover, and on one half we have Thor, and it looks like he's running away from a couple big giants, and we've seen these giants before, actually, a few issues ago, where they were skulking around Asgard when Asgard was under attack by Surtur. And on the other half of the page, we have Beta Ray Bill, likewise, seems to be running away from these guys in gold armor. Where have we seen these guys before? Probably in the last issue, the one before the Hercules issue. So that would have been back in Radio Free Asgard, episode number 44, or thereabouts. Yeah, 44. Okay, so we open up to the splash page here, and we have Stan Lee presents The Mighty Thor, A New Deal from an Old Deck, or The Credit Card Soldiers. And we start out the issue with a bunch of children running and playing in the snow, and they're being watched by these two evil giants that we saw a few issues back. Though the way the perspective is on this, it makes it look like they're actually walking between the giant's legs without noticing. But anyway,
there's a cave and he's behind it or something.
Yeah, it's kind of wonky, this page. Yeah. Anyway, this is the gang of children which Thor is leading back to Asgard from where they're returning after the big battle. And these two giants notice the children playing leapfrog in the snow, because that's the game you want to be playing in the snow.
Why not, eh?
Yeah, seriously. And the kids are saying, "Boy, I can't wait to get home. Me neither. Do you think our folks have come back from Midgard yet? I hope so. I miss my mom's cooking." Apparently Frigga is a really shitty cook. And giants are coming up from behind them, and the kids notice. They go, "Run, run for your lives."
But too late.
Yeah, it's too late. One of the giants grabs them up in his hand and says, "Ho, ho, too late, Roberts. I'm going to take him, and I got him, and I'm call him George." After so many days of roots and grubs, we feast tonight on fresh meat. All I can say is if they're eating grubs, there must be some huge-ass grubs in Asgard.
"I can't believe this. Does everybody think we're food? You let us go or we'll be in big trouble."
"No longer, Rabbits. Odin the One-Eyed is gone, and soon the giants will reign supreme."
And they hear a voice from behind them. "How nice to see the traditional enemies of Asgard playing with her children. But perhaps you'd best set the children down gently, lest your great hands bruise them unintentionally." And they are dismayed to see Thor, so much so that they just drop all the kids in the snow with a giant plop. And the giants go running. Thor's like, "Long has it been since Mjolnir rung against the thick skulls of my traditional enemies." We talked about this a little bit in the last episode, where we were talking about the enmity between the gods and the giants. So here it is, played out in the comic.
Specifically the frost giants.
Exactly, yeah. And
the fire giants, yeah, they're bad too, but they really got a hard-on for beating on the frost giants.
They do, and especially in the myth that we read last episode, which is the giant who built the wall around Asgard. He was a stone giant.
Right.
Yeah, so that was... Thor is all excited to be slaying giants, but he gets stopped by Frigga. And she's like,
"Toad Thor."
"What, Frigga? You would have me spare those wretches?"
"I would, foster son. My husband Odin is gone beyond recall, and I have had my fill of killing. Those pathetic things are starving. Shall we not leave a little of our food for them to find? The Golden City is a long way off, and we have many miles yet to travel. Let us grant them peace and be on our way."
And Thor agrees to that, apparently reluctantly, hoping that they don't regret having left the giants alive. And then we cut back to New York City, where we find Sif and Beta Ray Bill in his non-Beta Ray Thor disguise. So he has the smooth face as opposed to the horsey face.
And yeah, because that's much better. Much less conspicuous.
It is much less conspicuous. But he's wearing a trench coat now. So he's trying anyway. Yeah.
Well, the Thing used to get away with a trench coat and hat all the time.
Right.
He should probably wear a hat, yes.
Now, what would have been really funny was it would be if somebody came up to him and said, "Hey, aren't you the Thing?" Because they're both orange.
That's true.
Yeah. No, he's not very rocky looking. But no. Or maybe the New Yorkers are just used to seeing the Thing around. So
they're just so jaded. They're like, big orange dude must be the Thing. It's fine.
So anyway, they're walking around this, looks like an outdoor, or maybe it's an indoor shopping mall. It's really not very clear.
Yeah.
And like a flea market type of thing. They're just kind of seeing the sights, and Sif notices this table full of Groucho glasses, which, of course, I see that in the mall all the time. You know, there's just tables of these things lying around.
And well, in the 80s, it was a different time.
That's true. Yes. Do you remember the great Groucho glass craze of 1985?
Oh, yeah. All the kids had them.
I don't remember that either. So Sif grabs one of these pairs of Groucho glasses off the table and decides that Beta Ray Bill's just being too stuffy and boring. And just because he's trapped on Earth doesn't mean that he can't enjoy himself. And so she puts a pair of the Groucho glasses on him, doesn't pay for them, so technically she's shoplifting.
Yep, they're pulling a Breakfast at Tiffany's here.
Yeah, and she says that he looks very distinguished in glasses. It's a good look for him. At least he has a nose now.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, it's kind of like Stan Lee or something now.
Now we see.
So Beta Ray Bill says, "I'm not at all sure this is how Asgardians ought to comport themselves when they're visiting a foreign country."
Yeah.
You'll learn. So a few blocks away, it's a busy street in New York City, and there's a guy with a broom and a dustpan. It's like a street cleaner type thing. And he dumps these credit cards into the garbage can. And we know they're credit cards because of the title of the story.
Ah.
They say the credit card thieves, or is it? I have to go back and look now.
Good catch.
The credit card soldiers. So they dumps these credit cards in the garbage, and he walks away, and then he goes around a corner and he twists the handle of his broom. So apparently this broom is part of his power. And these golden armored people kind of pop out of the garbage can, and we recognize them from as the thieves that we saw rob the jewelry store last episode in the Salbi Sema issue. And they are deploying to rob some sort of a business or a bank or something.
Federal there. Bank, it says.
Ah, Federal Bank. There we go. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So they crash into the bank and they say, "Everyone down on the floor now. The GLF has arrived."
GLF.
Yeah. I wonder what that means.
Something. The Gold Liberation Front.
Maybe it could be. They have gold armor, so yeah. That would be a very DC thing to call them.
Yeah.
So it's Corporal Blue, collect the currency. The sergeant and I will get the rest. Corporal Red, get those charges planted. And we have a kind of a stir happening here. And Sif and Beta Ray Bill are there. And she's talking about how bald men are so sensual. That sounds like a Jane Foster line.
No, I know. She's totally did. Thor's not good enough. Now there's Beta Ray Bill here.
That's right. Right. Anyway, they hear an explosion and they decide to go see what's going on here.
The look on Beta Ray Bill's face when he hears the explosion and turns his head is hilarious. It's the expression the glasses give him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's too funny.
It's like he's really serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Clark Kent.
Yeah, exactly. Who appeared just a few issues ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a cameo. Anyway, so the GLF is bursting out of the bank and they've got their little laser guns are going bazap, bazap, bazap.
Yeah.
And apparently they're trying to destroy the bank's records completely so that the bank won't know how much they stole. So that's kind of clever, actually.
For the time, anyway.
Yeah. And Sif says, "Outlaws, Bill. And armed far beyond the ability of the mortal men-at-arms to cope with. I must strike my cane upon the ground, and with the cash." He changes into Beta Ray Thor and kind of leaps off after these miscreants. And the miscreants notice that he's coming. There's somebody in a red cape, and they have scanners that identify, I guess, the various superheroes and so forth. And this one identifies him as Thor. It says, "Precise identification impossible. Closest approximation, Thor, 72.39% probability. Options, take cover." And at that moment, one of them gets smashed by Stormbreaker. And of course, the hammer returns to his hand, and the guy has to state the obvious. "I don't know who that guy is, but look, his hammer's coming back to him, just like Thor's." Obviously, Mort Weisinger was writing that dialogue there.
He's the guy that states the obvious in the team.
Well, that happens a lot in these Simonson comics, and
it's the old school, right?
Yeah, it goes right back to the Silver Age and Mort Weisinger and Jerry Siegel, and you know that well from the Silver Age Legion stories.
Yeah, not to discount Jim Shooter's influence either. He was very big on that whole every issue is somebody's first issue. Kind of
that is true, and we had
spell it all out for him.
And we had that even in we covered the Thor Vikings miniseries, which we wrapped up last episode, and they always have that recap in the beginning of the issue, either a summary or you have one of the characters kind of explaining what's going on, which would never happen in real life, but yeah, it's the old comics trope, so we love it.
Yep.
The guys are trying to get away, and Sif is warning Bill to watch out for the one over on the right, and they're like, "Oh, so you know who that ugly one over there is, don't you? Maybe we better have a chat, sister." And they try to grab Sif, but of course Sif is no slouch either, and she sends this guy sailing over her shoulder, and she's, "I am not your sister, mortal, and you'd best remember that." "Okay, okay, I believe you."
As it was flying through the air.
Yeah, and "The name Vipers is Beta Ray Bill, and I am here to protect mortals from creatures like you, just as I protect my own people." "Unreal. We can't break through his shield, man." He doesn't say that, but it sounds like he should.
He's the hippie.
Yeah. "Unreal, man.
Corporal hippie.
This is Captain Black calling the commander on scramble frequency. I'm monitoring your current status. Who is that creature?" "He looks like a bad imitation of Thor, but he's no cut-rate version. He seems to have all of Thor's strength and powers." "We shall debate that later. Attention all troops. Execute escape maneuver 10 Delta immediately." And they all go soaring off into the air in their fake Iron Man armor. with a vroom. And they all go flying towards the garbage can that they burst out of earlier. And as they approach the garbage can, there's a giant screech, and they're gone.
Wow.
And Sif is like, what happened to them? They just vanished. I don't know either. The flash of light blinded me momentarily, but they're too well-trained and too dangerous to let escape like that. I'll take to the air and see if I can locate them again. And they don't notice all these yellow credit cards laying on the ground by the trash can. And the guy comes up with his little broom and sweeps him up.
That's a pretty ingenious escape tool.
That's a pretty awesome escape tool when you think about it.
I like it.
It's like it's better than a boom tube, I have to say.
It's original, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Simonson, you done good there. Meanwhile, on the Manhattan's Upper West Side, we have the Warriors 3 kind of continuing their shopping trip from last issue. And we have Fandral and Hogan and Volstagg. And Volstagg is wearing an I Heart New York t-shirt, which is way too small for him.
It's basically just like, it's almost a midi t-shirt on him.
It is, yeah.
It's got no sleeves.
Yeah, well, and it's because he's Volstagg.
That's true.
So, I like how the puffy shoulders on his shirt stick out over the t-shirt.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't have any sleeves, because they're all crumpled up and shoulder pad things.
Yeah, whenever I travel anywhere and I've ever bought a t-shirt, I've never been able to find one that really fits properly. So Volstagg is kind of lucky here. So, not that I'm as fat as Volstagg, mind you, but still.
I was going to say, he must have an even harder time than you do. So.
He must, yeah. Obviously, paid for the shirt with gold coins, and they made it special for him. And mm-hmm. We have a cameo here on this page as we get to it. So they're talking about the city and how they love the towers and the pavilions and how they're talking about just chilling in New York City. And they're walking around, and Volstagg is talking about how he relishes the field of battle, the stench of fear and death. And for these alone doth the Lion of Asgard live. Why, I recall the time when I fought in a city so large against foes so vast as to make this place seem a mere hamlet by comparison. Left, right, and I laid the foe about me and slew 1,000 giants single-handed. It was an experience worth a man's soul. I think he was talking to Hercules.
Yeah, Hercules isn't the only one who's got a little...
Seriously. Well, like you said, Volstagg...
Dubious quality.
Volstagg is just like Hercules, but fat.
But fatter, yeah. Yep, he's fat Hercules.
And we see a group of kids overhearing this, and the little girl goes, "Gee, really think he killed 1,000 giants?
Oh, grow up, Katie. Nobody could beat that many guys. Besides, everybody knows there's no such thing as giants."
And Hogan is kind of sneaking up behind Jack here, because this is, of course, the power pack. We have...
Trying Jack's to remember. Hair is miscolored, so I didn't quite catch
it. Yeah, yeah. And he's coming up behind him. But there might be giants, my young friend, and the Lion of Asgard may have slain his share. Have a care lest he hear and look to see who makes light of the deeds of the mighty, for his wrath is truly awesome. He hath been known to sit upon small trolls. And Jack is looking a little frightened here. Well, the Hogan is pretty intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Jack is pretty, looks suitably chastised. Of course, remember, right at this time... Louise Simonson was writing Power Pack.
Yeah, I love Power Pack.
That was a great series.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, and I don't know how often they cross over into Thor, but I think they do at least once more.
I know they cross over with the X-Men a lot.
They did, yeah, and with Fantastic Four as well, because Franklin was a member of the Power Pack for a while.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, Hogan catches up with the other Warriors 3, and they're wondering where he is, and coming, I was just cautioning these young mortals to tread warily in the footsteps of the Lion, meaning Volstagg, of course. And they're like, yep. Where did he come from? Meanwhile, Sif and Beta Ray Bill are standing on top of the North Tower of the World Trade Center, which Walt Simonson likes to use in the Thor comics. Mm-hmm. And it seems a little bit weird now, but at the time it made perfect sense. And they're kind of wondering about these criminals, and Sif is wondering if they'll be able to locate them if they strike again. And Beta Ray Bill's Bi-Hammer Stormbreaker is now attuned to the energy release that heralded the appearance of the bandits. Should they decide to strike within the boundaries of this metropolis, we shall know. They seem like eager thieves. I do not think we shall have long to wait.
Do you remember, Bill, our talk in Asgard before Lord Odin created Stormbreaker for you? He said you had surrendered your humanity to become a guardian of the people. You were wrong. I have lived a long time, Bill, and I have never encountered another who was so powerful, yet so vulnerable.
Ah.
I never would have believed in it possible in an immortal.
And why do you smile, lady? Well, probably because he's wearing the stupid glasses, but...
Yeah. Waka, waka, waka. Yeah.
Because I find that I have more sympathy now for Thor and his romance with a mortal than I ever did living in Asgard. It is not as simple as I might have thought. Mortals live so short a time. Perhaps this is why Odin forbade Thor's love for Jane Foster?
Maybe just because Jane Foster was a slut.
Yeah. He, like all right-thinking people, just didn't like Jane Foster.
Exactly. He had good taste.
Yeah.
It would be so easy to denounce one heritage.
Yeah, I like the note here. They put a note in here a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that was 1967.
It was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. So we cut back to Asgard on the next page, and a change in art style. Which
kind of, yeah, yeah.
It's inked differently, and I'm wondering, you know, I know that Walt Simonson inked this issue. I'm pretty sure that he inked this whole issue by himself. But all of a sudden, the art style is looking a little bit different. So they're in Thor's castle, and you remember... the issue before this, before the Hercules issue, Loki and Lorelei had returned to Asgard and they're hanging out at Loki's castle and right. Kind of plotting their next move here.
Mm-hmm.
And Lorelei's, I'm always surprised, Loki, to discover your Aerie is so handsomely appointed. He's an interior decorator. Come on.
That's right.
When he's not out turning taxi cabs into ice cream and
all that wacky stuff.
All that wacky stuff. He's
giving really stupid guys superpowers.
Yeah, exactly. That he's doing major decorating here. Anyway, I thought sorcerers lived lives of austerity, mortifying their flesh and suffering.
Many do, Lorelei, especially those who are not particularly successful. And because they are not successful, they measure their success in attainable goals, such as poverty, want, and hunger. A depressing breed, certainly not worth emulating. I am modestly reticent about my achievements, but my goals are clear.
So Lorelei is complimenting Loki here.
So your aura of power, Loki, however reticent you may be, I can feel its heat above that of the fire. It's fascinating. I have never felt anything like it before. Tell me, did you not have a wife?
And Loki doesn't really want to talk about that. He's like, that, my dear, was over long ago.
But I would prefer to discuss the present. And Thor.
Thor! Always Thor! Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. It's exactly what I was thinking.
She pulls Loki, again.
He's so unbearably dull. And he doesn't always do what I want him to do. He didn't come back to me when the fighting was done.
But he will, my dear, he will. Before, he thought you were a mortal woman named Melody. When you use the contents of this box, Thor won't care who you are.
Are you sure? What is it?
And this box looks exactly like the casket of the ancient winters, except it's purple.
Yeah.
So I guess all the boxes in Asgard.
Same designer.
Like. Yeah, it's the same. It's like they mold them out of yellow plastic, or they mold them out of purple plastic. Yeah. And anyway, Loki tells her what's in it.
It's a gift from Lofen, whoever that is. The goddess who inspires passion in men or gods to heights undreamed of.
And apparently inside the vial is a bunch of green hair. That's what it looks like.
I think it's probably supposed to be like swirling mists.
I would agree. You know what this inking actually reminds me a little bit of? Ernie Cullen, who used to draw the Amethyst series.
Yeah, that's, it seems an awful lot like he took a lot more time on this section, or...
Well, he had 2 months off, remember?
Yeah, he had maybe he did the first part when he was sort of rushed and he said, okay, look, I'm not going to get this done.
Yeah.
That's, or the other way around, he was doing this one and it was taking too long, and then they had to get the fill-in, so then he just quick dashed off the rest of it.
Simonson was on vacation and had a little bit of extra time, but yeah, it does remind me a lot of the sort of Ernie Cullen inking, and it's just like stuff from like Madame Xanadu and stuff like that. Little shades of Kaluda here and there.
Yeah, lots of little hatch marks and stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Simonson always has that. It's a great page. It's a great great few pages actually. So she's holding up this bottle with this sort of green hair mist or whatever it is inside. Loki says,
once he has been cloaked in its scent, Thor will be your slave. Your merest whim will be his ironclad command. And with Odin gone and the throne of Asgard empty, what better time to rule his son?
If you but suggest what he might support Loki in his bid to gain the crown, why, he would walk through a fire to see that it's done. And once the throne is Loki's, who knows what foul accident may befall the noble son of Odin. And I will rule the world!
Wah, ha, 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 ha.
Melody is thinking to herself in this own little plotting here. And once Thor is mine, who knows what his power might accomplish at my command? And we then cut scene back to the ruins of Asgard, and the Enchantress, Amora, appears among the rubble and has managed to spell her way back to Asgard. She says here that the rift between Midgard and Asgard is already getting wider. With the Rainbow Bridge broken, Asgard is drifting further away from Earth.
Uh-oh.
And she can't believe her eyes at how ruined the city is. And she can't detect Odin's power at all. Well, probably because he fell down the hole.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Odin, fall down the hole.
Oh, down go boom.
Yep. She's thinking about that, and she happens across Odin's scepter, just kind of laying there in the dirt, and she's kind of scheming about what she's going to do about Lorelei, because they had that confrontation when Searcher's forces were attacking New York, and the Enchantress came to her for help, and Melody basically says, yeah, screw you, I'm not helping. So the Enchantress found out about her scheme to entrap Thor and swore to make her fail. So this is connected with that. So the Enchantress finds the staff, and she says, from here before me I see this great scepter of Odin, still seething with power, lying no doubt where it fell in the last great struggle. Yes, this will be perfect. You have sought Thor, Lorelei. You shall find someone else, someone you deserve, for it takes no foresight to know who will seek out the scepter with Odin gone. And when he does, your fate shall be sealed. And she casts a spell on the scepter and leaves it lying there, and the Enchantress is gone. So then we cut back to the snowy hills of Asgard, and we find the kids are getting ready to throw snowballs at Thor and Frigga. And Thor is pretending like he doesn't know this is going to happen. And he's telling Frigga his problems and kind of confiding in his stepmother. And says, I loved this mortal woman, Melody, with all my heart, suddenly, furiously, like a storm. And yet, as the weeks have gone by, her face recedes from my memory like a dream. And I begin to wonder if perhaps I was not dreaming. Still, oh, excuse me a moment. And he ducks the snowballs. They go with, with over his head. And he uses his hammer to throw a whole wave of snow at the quote-unquote evil frost fairies hiding behind this snow fort. And the kids are all covered in snow, and Thor is making fun of them. And he says, but I don't see Gunnhild among your number. And at that point, the snowball comes from behind and knocks off Thor's helmet.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Hildi is the clever one. This is the Volstagg's clever daughter. So we know. I'm guessing most of these kids are Volstagg's, because he was supposed to have 18 children. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, So they knock Thor's helmet off, and they say, yeah, great shot, let's get out of here. And Frigga points out that Thor could have dodged the snowball, and Thor says he could have, yeah. But if they were not encouraged with a small degree of success, the children would soon tire of the game, and the road home would seem that much longer. And Frigga's being insightful here.
And your road, Thor?
I no longer see it clearly, Frigga. For as the face of Melody recedes from my sight, the visage of Sif seems sharper and clearer. I do not regret that she went with Bill. She chose well. Midgard and its confines are not for her. She had lost the savor of living, and Bill and his noble quest provided it. Yet my heart misgives me that I should never have let her go, that I may have lost her forever. And, so it's kind of a little bit of foreshadowing there of upcoming plot developments here. And Thor says, oh, excuse me again, as the kids come to attack again. We then cut back to Earth, and we have the secret headquarters of the GLF, and the boss is chewing all these guys out. And he's like, I could have hired tougher invalids.
He's Stan Lee, too?
He is, yeah. Hey, true believers, this is Stan Lee. Anyway, that sounded more like Jimmy Durante, Ha-cha-cha-cha.
Stan sounds a lot like Jimmy Durante.
It did, no, a little bit, yeah, yeah. A monstrous imitation of Thor and a young woman to make you look like amateurs. Your battle suits make you the equal of any so-called superheroes that infest this vermin-ridden city. And this is the boss guy's talking. And is it just me, or does this guy look like the Titanium Man?
A little bit. He also kind of looks like Herbie. a giant version of Herbie from the Fantastic Four.
He does, actually. Anyway, it's this big green robot-looking thing, and I don't know if it's the Titanium Man or what. So he's chewing his army out here, and it says, "Do not anger me, Captain Black. We'll meet at 1300 hours to discuss our next target. Until then, you may return to your weapons practiced." And they leave, and he's, "Idiots! The finest exoskeleton augmented armor provided, and they are still unable to defeat a single enemy. Yet there may be something in what they say. Perhaps I should venture forth to meet this threat to the plan." And he summons forward somebody called Sergei.
Well, that adds credence to your theory.
Yeah, could be the Titanium Man. "And your devices have done well so far. I am pleased. Now you will prepare the screening grid. I shall be needing it." And this is, Sergei is apparently the guy with the broom that we met earlier. And so I haven't had time to test it yet fully. "Nonetheless, prepare it. I am sure the device will function perfectly. Or have you forgotten that I hold the lives of your parents in my hand?" That's a threat there. "I haven't forgotten. See that you do not. Now leave me, for I would energize my own suit to the peak of capacity." Yeah, see, this might be. It could be, or it could be somebody we've never seen before. And the guy who threw the credit cards in the trash is now releasing a bunch of cockroaches. Or crickets. No, they're crickets and cockroaches.
They're supposed to be cockroaches.
Well, there's crickets and cockroaches, it looks like. But anyway, they're just bugs.
Cockroaches and some less well-drawn cockroaches.
Yeah. So I wonder if they change into warriors too. I don't know.
Because they're skittering.
They are skittering about. And we then return to the ruins of Asgard, where Loki is wandering through the ruins. And what does he find? Odin's Scepter of Power. Oh my. And reaches down and caresses Odin's throbbing staff. And
like you do.
"Ah, I found it. Odin's Scepter of Power." Yeah, who could have foreseen that? Yeah. "Within my grasp, just as the throne will be. Curious, for a moment I felt a tingle as though..." somebody left the vibrator on. "But no, 'tis merely the power of the scepter itself flowing through me. A feeling I have long awaited to savor. A feeling I shall soon savor forever." And his privacy is encroached upon by none other than Walt Simonson, dressed as Heimdall.
Cosplay action.
He's got a very Simonson-esque beard here.
He does,
"Greetings, Loki. Heimdall, my thanks for recovering the great scepter. With Odin gone, it must be held carefully in trust until another god sits upon the high seat. The guardian of the Rainbow Bridge should have some duties now that the bridge no longer exists. And there are none so trustworthy as yourself to guard the scepter. Considering those who remain in Asgard, Loki, you have voiced my thoughts exactly." Ooh. And they go, dissing all Loki there.
Burn.
Well, you know, Heimdall and Loki in the myths are the mortal archenemies. So it's, and they end up killing each other at Ragnarok.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So there you go. Meanwhile, Thor, Frigga, and the children have arrived back on the scene, and they see the horrible ruins of Asgard, and Frigga is kind of overwhelmed by the destruction, and is like, "The city was so beautiful."
"And it shall be again, Mother. Its glory shall rise as lovely as before."
"Now let us enter our home and begin the tasks that await us. I hope they rebuild it looking like Jack Kirby drew it."
She doesn't really say that.
Because I really liked it back then. It had weird heads all over the place and McDonald's. Yeah. It was awesome.
And the Sydney Opera House and the statue of the unknown warrior. And good stuff. That's and Simonson had really done it in the more traditional Norse-looking Viking buildings and stuff.
Not space Vikings. Like
exactly. Approaching the city, the children say, "Look, Thor, it's Heimdall. He's okay." "I bid you greetings, Lady Frigga. Your sorrows are my own."
"Thank you, Heimdall. Thor has told me of your noble service. I shall never forget it."
And Heimdall draws her aside to talk to her. And Thor goes on to lead the children to their homes, see what they can salvage out of the wreckage. And we cut to where Heimdall and Frigga are talking. And Heimdall hands her the scepter and entrusts this to her because there's nobody more worthy to hold the trust than Frigga. And that's kind of the end of the scene. And then they're interrupted by one of the children. Says, "Frigga, Frigga, my house is gone. And I can't find my skates anywhere. Where's my mommy? I want my daddy. Why aren't they here?" And Frigga picks up the child.
Hush, my little one, and dry your tears. Your parents will be home soon, I promise. But now I want you all to stay with me until everybody's parents come home. We should start by trying to find some supper, don't you think?
And then we cut back to New York City. A lot of shifting around in this issue.
Yep, yep. Following the different threads.
Like you got a page or two in each place. Mm-hmm. And they're back in the top of the World Trade Center, and Bill and Sif are still talking, and Sif is asking Bill when he's planning on leaving, and he says when Thor comes back, he's going to go back home, because he has to guide his people to their own, to their new home.
Right.
She's saying, oh, it hurts. Who would have thought a victory could change so much? Asgard will be in chaos when the warriors return home and learn that Odin is gone, and I am sure that Loki is already planning to sit upon the high seat in Odin's stead. And Thor, he has lost his father. How can I stay away? Don't you see? I must go back.
Of course you must, m'lady. I have known that since you told me Odin was lost in the battle. I would have asked you to return with me ere this, but I knew I could not. Not now.
And to think I was afraid to speak of my decision for fear of a mortal's reaction. One thing you have taught me is that I do not understand mortals well. Bill strikes it up to a lack of practice.
Yeah.
Which I guess Sif thinks that's kind of amusing. I've thought of a way to return our troops to Asgard, Bill. I must go back to the Golden Realm and Thor. And we then cut back to Asgard, and Thor has found that his hall is still standing. And he goes home, basically, to his castle in Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking that guarding a flock of children is more tiring than fighting a host of frost giants. And so Heimdall apparently has offered to stay with Frigga and the children to guard them overnight. And Thor is looking forward to some time alone on his racing car bed, which is awesome.
It does kind of look like a racing car bed.
It is. It's an awesome racing car bed.
It's a huge one.
Yeah. It's like the Viking ship bed almost that he had in the Journey into Mystery issue.
Yeah.
He is laying there on his racing car bed, and all of a sudden this glass vial shatters on the floor, and this green smoke comes up, which is the green hair-like stuff that we saw earlier. Mm-hmm. And we have a voice saying, hello, Thor.
What? Who? Sif, is that you?
When I am finished with you tonight, my handsome one, you shall never think of Sif again.
Melody!
Dun, dun, and dun. That is Thor number 357. So, great issue, even though it's kind of a transitional little period here. I'm liking this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the little blurb at the end there where they're talking about Thor becoming a romance comic.
Yeah.
Is Thor becoming a romance comic? Has Marvel's fabulous Rock'em Sock'em book degenerated into nothing more than a puerile soap opera? Will kissing become the rule rather than the exception? Is nothing sacred? Don't hold your breath, and don't miss our next issue, When Dalliance Was in Flower. Same bat time, same bat channel. Well, other bats.
Yeah, When Dalliance Was in Flower, that sounds like an action-packed thrill buster, that one does.
It does indeed. And I guess we're going to find that out in the next episode. Interesting thing about this issue is there's actually no credits. So I have to pop onto Mike's Amazing World of Marvel Comics and see what's going on there. And it looks like, yeah, it's just the usual gang. It's Simonson did the art, including the inks. John Workman was the letterer. Christy Scheel was the colorist.
Huh.
All right, Scott, what'd you think of the issue?
Well, it wasn't as good as the Hercules one, but...
but what is? No, it's a good continuation, I think, of the story. And the Hercules issue is interesting because I'm wondering if maybe it was produced in a hurry.
It's possible. It seems like there was something going on there where... maybe Walt was sick for a bit or something like that. Yeah. Who knows?
Or maybe he was actually on vacation.
Actually on vacation, perhaps.
Well, after the Epic Searcher storyline, who could possibly blame him for going on vacation? So Scott, how is your pelting and trapping going? It's been a while since you've been with us.
Oh, you know, it goes. It's a lot easier now that there's not so much snow.
Ah. Well, anyway, thanks very much for being on the show. We hope you'll rejoin us again soon.
Oh, I'm sure you could talk me into it.
Yeah, anytime you want to be on the show, like I said, you know, feel free to join us. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Not really. You guys want to check out some Legion goodness? Hop on over to legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We talk about the Legion pretty much exclusively, but we do tend to, digress quite a bit.
I would say so.
Tangents are the name of the game.
Tangents are great. It's a great show.
Yeah. So check that out. Also, again, If you really are a glutton for punishment and you need just a little bit more Scott, you can go to doompodtrol.com. And that is, of course, a Doom Patrol podcast. We are nearing the end of the classic Silver Age run.
Oh, no.
What we do after that, I'm not sure. We are doing coverage of the Morrison run right now as well.
Cool.
So perhaps we'll just follow it chronologically up until the two of those meet and then figure out what to do from there. But always a good time. Also, lots of goofy Doom Patrol action.
Mm-hmm. So great. Well, thanks very much for joining me, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.
Yay!